Hello and welcome to another episode of Mostly Peaceful Latinas. I'm your host, Bella.
And I'm Linda.
And before we get started, please don't forget to show us some support. We are 100% self-funded, no lizard people, no Illuminati. Hit the subscribe button, hit that like. And without further ado, we have a very special guest in the studio with us today, legendary icon, Mr. Roger Stone. Welcome, Roger, to the show.
Welcome, Mr. Roger Stone.
I'm so happy to be with you.
And we are honored that you are here with us. So Linda and I obsess over Roger Stone. Roger Stone has been bringing down his enemies in the most...
In the political world and also in the most legendary way, because unlike the weak GOP that's scared of actually going on, what is it, offense, right?
They don't want to do offense.
They don't want to do offense. They don't want to be the bad guys. They don't want to be the mean guys. Roger Stone takes a different approach. And so we've realized that, like, the younger generations, perhaps they don't really know who Roger Stone is or understand. Just like we were kind of surprised when we watched the documentary of how long you've been in the political game. Since Nixon, so do you want to do a quick little intro for our audience?
We've kind of described you as the Forrest Gump of politics. Like anywhere in history that you can imagine that something monumental has happened.
I do seem to pop up at the strangest times. No, this is pretty simple. I'm a political warrior. I'm a veteran of 12 national presidential campaigns. My first job was under President Richard Nixon. I do have a tattoo of Nixon on my back, about the size of a grapefruit, right between my shoulder blades, which means I'm the only person you know with a dick on the front and the back. And people say, "Whoa, Nixon, he was a criminal." No, he was actually one of your greatest presidents. He got you a strategic arms limitation agreement with the Soviets. He ended the Vietnam War. He ended the military draft. He gave you the 18-year-old vote. He launched the war on cancer. He saved Israel over the objections of Henry Kissinger, the National Security Staff, and the Yom Kippur War, when Israel had their backs against the sea, surprise attack by the Syrians and the Egyptians. Israel was about to be annihilated. It was Nixon who airdrops $37 million worth of lethal aid to the Israelis so the Israeli state survives. He desegregated the public schools. So he was a great president. But more importantly, he was indestructible. So the reason I have a tattoo of him on my back is not ideological, because he was, by and large, a pragmatist, a conservative on some issues, moderate on others. But he was undefeatable. In other words, he just kept coming back again and again. So it is that resilience... Right. It is that persistence that I admire. So when I see the tattoo in the mirror in the day, I remember his greatest statement. He said, "The greatness comes not when things go always good for you, but when you suffer some defeats, you take some knocks. Because until one has been in the deepest valley, one cannot appreciate the majesty of the highest mountaintop." In other words, a man is not finished when he's defeated. He is only finished when he quits. And I've really been bolstered by that, because there have been times when the burden gets heavy. I mean, I had the whole weight of the entire federal government and the mass media against me. And it was very simple. I mean, I've known Donald Trump for 42 years. I'm one of the first people in the country who suggested that he should run for president.
Right.
The Mueller investigation seized on that friendship, and I think the entire country saw, on the morning of January 25th, 29 heavily armed FBI agents in full SWAT gear surround my house, 6 o'clock in the morning, swarm my house to arrest me for a completely fabricated crime of lying to Congress about what? Russian collusion. Wait a minute.
Russian collusion.
How do you lie about something that didn't happen? Yeah. It's not even possible. But the real reason they arrested me had nothing to do with Russian collusion. They wanted me to testify against Trump. They squeezed me and pressured me, and they said, "Look, Stone, here's 26 or 29 phone calls, cell phone calls between you and Trump in 2016. All you've got to do is say, this was about the Russians, this was about WikiLeaks, and we'll tell the judge to give you leniency in your sentencing." And I told them where to go. I wouldn't do that. I refused to do that, which is why the president ultimately realized that I was being victimized in an effort to get him, which is why he had the strength and the courage to give me a pardon.
Right.
But look, I worked for Ronald Reagan in three presidential campaigns, 1976, 1980, and 1984. I was not a big fan of the Bushes, to be quite honest with you. But I did work for Senator Bob Dole, who was one of the greatest men of the 20th century. And I'm proud to have been early on the Trump train because he is going to be your 45th and your 47th president. Just like Grover Cleveland, who was also a New Yorker. Cleveland was elected, then they cheated him out of a re-election, then he came back and took it back. History is going to repeat itself. Trump is going to be president again.
And do you think, I mean, we're not on YouTube, so we can talk about the election stuff, right?
Yeah, it's going to be our Rumble.
So if you say he's going to be the president again, what makes us think that they'll allow that to happen? If we obviously say that the election was compromised in 2020... How can we guarantee that they're not going to do the same thing?
Well, a lot of the answer lies in what happens just a few weeks from now. In other words, I think even Trump would concede that when he had power last time, he did not recognize this wasn't going to be like it always was before. Because in America, what happened is you have elections. Somebody wins, somebody loses. Everybody gets together for the good of the country. Right. They let the president serve, and so on. Trump didn't recognize that from the instant he won, they had a plan to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. Because they had a cozy deal. It was going to be Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton.
Right.
That's all one criminal gang. They're all in it together. They're all stealing together.
That's a unit party.
So, for example, the Bushes and the Clintons had a Haitian earthquake relief fund, $65 million. Boom, gone, disappeared. Where did it go? They closed it down. We didn't even know where the money went. Well, we know where the money went. Yeah. It went in their pockets. So it's the same criminal globalist deal.
Right.
They try to sound different at election time, but there's really no difference. And Trump comes along, and they make the mistake of underestimating him. He's a cartoon character from New York. There's no way. And Trump is like the right guy at the right place at the right time. People are fed up with politics.
Right.
They hate politicians.
They hate them.
They no longer believe the media. He's entertaining. He's funny. Right. He's interesting. And, oh, my God, I like what he said about putting America first.
Right.
Why are we constantly getting screwed in our trade deals? Why are we sending all these men and women abroad to fight these wars where we don't really have any interest? I mean, he's really comes along at a key time, and the political elites completely misunderstand what's going on out there. Particularly Hillary Clinton, who has all the advantages. She has more money than he does. She has the media support behind her. And she and her husband have extensive experience in political presidential campaigning. Trump is a first-time candidate, but he's a phenomena. Mm-hmm. And people tune into him because they know he's not phony. They know he's not managed. He's not handled. There's not some 22-year-old writing this stuff. They know he'll say whatever pops into his head. They find it refreshing. Mm-hmm. They find it genuine. They find it authentic. Yeah. So I recognized as early as 1988 that he should run for president. I told him the first time. We were sitting in his office, and he said, George Bush and Al Gore. Can you imagine? That's the worst choice I can possibly imagine. There has to be someone better. Pardon me. Let me restate that. George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis. There has to be somebody better. And I said, well, there is. Great. Who is it? We should get behind them. I said, well, I was thinking about you. He said, you're out of your mind. I said, no, let's stop. Think about this. You have strong opinions about the country. You think our military is not strong enough. You think we're getting taken to the cleaners in these trade deals. You think that we're getting rolled by every country around the world. Mm-hmm. You can articulate that. Why wouldn't you consider it? So he agreed to do an exploratory trip to New Hampshire. We took his big black helicopter up there. More people turned out to watch the helicopter land than showed up to watch George Bush a week earlier. And he was phenomenal. I mean, it's the first time I saw the Trump electricity.
Yeah.
I saw the potential. He has a certain charisma that is unmatchable.
Yeah.
And it's why I think that the best is yet to come, as he would say.
Nice. Sounds. We, when we saw the documentary, I think that one of the things that really caught on, or that we were like inspired by other than everything else, and aside from the vision of having
the
Trump
foresight
as president,
of seeing Trump,
is how you play the media.
Well, it's harder like, than it, it's harder you, than it's, well, it's, hey, it's. I must say, it's harder than it used to be.
Right.
I mean, I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I've written 5 books. I've had a successful show on InfoWars. I was on 18 months with Alex Jones. I was getting as many downloads as he was.
Downloads, I like that word.
But yeah. But it is interesting, as I learned the hard way, is that as soon as I became a victim of the Mueller investigation, the very same reporters that I had been spoon-feeding, that I had been helping, whose kids I helped get into school, whose stories I helped develop when they needed information, the same people who were feeding, I was helping, turn on you like a dime. They're like a pack of rats.
There's no loyalty.
There's no loyalty.
Well, and you know, you can't expect loyalty. You want loyalty? Get a dog. There is no loyalty in this business. And now, for the first time ever, in 2020, all mass communications in the United States are controlled and censored. That never happened before. So network television, cable television, print media, newspapers, magazines, and the internet. Radio is the last frontier, and slowly corporate radio chains.
Right, exactly. All Latino media, so it's pretty much dying.
It's all being squeezed out. It's much, much harder. You have this monolithic fake news media, and the best example of this is their continued ridiculous insistence that there's no evidence of voter fraud whatsoever.
Right.
And if you say that, you're either a conspiracy theorist or you're a domestic terrorist. Well, unfortunately, as you know, the evidence of election fraud is both overwhelming and compelling. One has to do is open your eyes. But if you say that, boom, you are banned on Twitter, as I am. You are banned on Facebook, as I am. You are banned on Instagram for life, as I am. You are banned on YouTube, as I am. You are banned on TikTok. Which is kind of good because it means the red Chinese don't have what's in my phone. But so
you're banned out of all those
networks? I'm banned
networks?
Out of all of them. I was
Did
banned.
They tell you for so life?
I violated their community standards, whatever that means.
For the voter fraud?
No.
Just for existing and being Roger Stone?
No, because they don't like my tailoring, I think.
Do you think you can get back on Twitter now that Elon Musk has taken
I'm
over?
I'm very hopeful that I can get back on Twitter.
Right.
I had 1 million followers, just to be clear, 990,000. I really think that Kanye's going to acquire Parler. I think they're going to improve it. Mechanically, technically.
Right.
I have 400,000 followers, just under, on Parler. Parler was working great for me until it didn't. So I think both of those places are potentially going to be reinvigorated. And you notice how crazy the left is going. Oh, they're going to become sites of disinformation. No, that's not the problem.
They're already sites of disinformation.
Right. You have
transgender women saying that they can get pregnant, which is, I mean, men.
And calling for the cancellation of anyone who says that
women and girls.
It's a sewer of hatred and invective and violence.
You know, they let Antifa run wild.
Well, look,
they don't allow the Proud Boys, but Antifa can exist on Twitter. And Twitter is the reason, we've talked about this before. Twitter is the reason why Antifa exists and how they organize. Because that's how they fundraise.
Yep.
That's how they get the word out. That's how they cancel people. It's all on Twitter.
No, there's no question. So let's just say I'm traveling between here and the West Coast. And I stop to make a connection in Atlanta or Dallas. Well, then what happens is some asshole takes my picture, puts it up on Twitter and says, Roger Stone is at gate, B-29 at the Atlanta airport. And suddenly I'm dealing with a bunch of crazed, violent leftists. Mm-hmm. My family's not safe. My wife was attacked outside my house 2 Christmases ago by some violent creep. I just don't understand this mentality, but violence and public shaming is becoming part of their game. And if you push back, oh, you're the violent one.
Oh, yeah.
Like they do to the Proud Boys.
Generally speaking, Roger,
to bring up on that, you've made a career out of not actually giving a fuck what anybody has to say. And if they say that you're a horrible person and that you're mean and Roger Stone has no morals, you've really just not let that faze you. What kind of advice do you give to people? You know, you've been in this your entire life. so many people just recently started getting involved and waking up to the great necessity of civil responsibility over the last couple of years. What kind of advice can you give to somebody that is worried about that cancel culture, what people have to say, and, you know, how they can get over that in order to be able to play a significant part in saving the republic?
There's a fundamental question. Do you want to be free or not? Do you want to live free or not? If you want to live on your knees when there's something wrong with you. I mean, look, I've also been very honest and straightforward about the fact that when they were trying to put me in a dank Georgia prison for 7 to 9 years, you know, I was redeemed in Jesus Christ. I did have a religious reawakening. I reaffirmed my belief in Jesus. I prayed, and guess what? He delivered me from my persecutors. So God always wins. That's what these people don't get. God always wins. Everything that we are experiencing has been predicted. It's all in the Bible.
Right. It's also cyclical. I mean, there's been worse times in history before. There's been high inflation. There's been degeneracy.
I used to think that the Bible was some antiquated book that was hard to understand and that it didn't really matter. Now I understand that everything you want to know is there.
Yep.
Everything that's happening is being predicted, and the final result is also being predicted.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready for the blood red moon. When that happens, it's the end times.
I'm waiting for it because things have gotten just a little bit too ghetto for
clownish.
We don't know. I mean, there are end times. What we don't know is whether we're in the beginning of the end times, the middle of the end times, or the end of the end times. Here's what we do know. There was a time in America when both parties were patriotic, when both parties were anti-communist, when both parties believed in freedom. Republicans wanted to spend and tax a little more, a little less. The Democrats wanted to spend and tax a little more. But generally speaking, both parties were patriotic. That's over. The Democratic Party of Kennedy, of Truman, that party's been taken over by crazed, woke, progressive, socialist, communist lunatics. So there's no moderate Democrat is an oxymoron. There are no moderate Democrats. AOC wanted to challenge Chuck Schumer because he's not left-wing enough.
Yeah.
Think about that for a moment. So we're in an odd place, and people need to get involved. Sticking your head in the sand, you're going to wake up one day and realize that all your freedoms have been taken. When they come to vaccinate your children against your will, or they tell you where you're going to live, or that you can't own a car anymore. I'm sorry. Car ownership is being
disallowed. Because of climate change. Right. Climate change cultists will do anything to get their message across and to get their agenda, their green agenda.
So they're talking about that are happening.
They're
locally.
Talking about dogs now. Like, don't get a Labrador. Get a poodle because it's less... what is it? Carbon monoxide or space on Earth?
Like
they're lunatics. They're a cult and a religion. Leftism is a mental disorder.
To Roger's point,
there's no question
about that. And it's all things that they're working on locally. Like this entire ideology isn't coming from the top down.
No.
These individuals are attacking local school boards, local commissioners, local municipalities in order to be able to insert their green agenda and their bullshit. Right? I talked about. There is an organization called the Global Covenant of Mayors. It's UN-sponsored, of course. And what they do is that they give UN grants into local municipalities that adopt the Green New Deal, basically. Miami is part of that list. And it's so descriptive of the fight that we're up against. So many people wake up every day and they'll say, you know, waiting for somebody to come save them. Whether it's, you know, is Donald Trump going to come back or when are things going to be fixed without... ever just kind of pointing the finger right back at themselves and realizing that without civic responsibility, we will lose our country.
No, people need to step up. So you need to vote, first and foremost.
Right.
You need to volunteer. You need to go to the school board meetings, and you need to shoot your mouth off. If you don't like what's being forced on your children, you need to show up and verbalize it. You can't be intimidated, and you can't be oppressed. The whole idea of masks, as I don't need to tell you this, masks had no medicinal value.
Nothing.
There's not a doctor in the world who thought the mask was going to protect you. The mask was about demonstrating control.
Correct.
It was all about control.
Right.
I don't think we're ever going back to masks. I think if they try the mask thing again, I mean, I still see a few lunatics going around wearing masks, but I love watching the guy in a closed car
talking to you, Billy Corbin,
wearing a mask. I mean, if you want to believe that crap, but here's the other point, which makes no sense whatsoever. And they like to deny this, but people are just suddenly dropping dead.
It's
a fact. Young people in good health, the carnage is just beginning. People say, oh, no, millions of people have been vaccinated and they've had no side effects, to which I say, yet.
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 We have no idea of the long-term effects of vaccines because they haven't been tested for cancer. They haven't been tested for diabetes.
They never went through clinical trials. Right. The people who make them have no legal liability. This is the big lie. This was all about making money. And Fauci tried this with AIDS. I mean, he could have legalized Bactrim, which is a simple drug, an oral, which had been around since the 50s. It's inexpensive. But for those gay men who had a very rare form of pneumonia, it was completely effective. He refused to allow it to be prescribed for that type of pneumonia for those with HIV because he wanted to make money on the vaccination. They could never come up with a vaccination that worked, so he missed his first opportunity to make hundreds of millions. This is just a recycle of this. So he's responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of gay men in the HIV thing, and now it's just happening all over. Excellent documentary by my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. on the real Dr. Anthony Fauci. The book is terrific. The documentary is even better.
Where can we watch that? Where can people watch it?
You can find it online. It is online now. It's easy to find. The truth about Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Roger, you mentioned Kanye West, a.k.a. Ye, who is being canceled by the whole world right now. He's the newest target of cancel culture. You love Ye. And we saw that you wrote an op-ed about Ye running with Trump as VP. Tell us about that. What's your vision there?
I think that he is, and I watched his entire two-part interview with Tucker Carlson, who's a great friend of mine. And I was very impressed, first of all, with his Christianity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was very impressed with his pro-life stance. I was very interested in the fact that he seems absolutely fearless.
And now
they're seeking to cancel him, but I don't think you can cancel somebody with this kind of money. But more importantly, you can't cancel someone with this kind of following. As I asked you before the show, are people going to stop buying his music? I don't think so.
Absolutely not. I think that people will pay double the price for his sneakers now than they would have before.
I mean, we just bought more sweaters from Gap right before they shut down the website. We're big Kanye fans, and there's literally
for a lot of the reasons that, you know, one of the main things for us is how do we take back the culture, right? So many people look at conservatives as stuffy and dusty, and you know, they think about old school conservative policies where like they don't want people to smoke weed and they don't want gay people to get married, and that's what they think about. And I think it's so important to give voice to the culture where it's like there's young people, there's good looking people, there's all fun sorts people. Of, you know, we say conservatism is the new punk rock. It's like you go against the establishment
I find it interesting that when his music took a more Christian turn, he sold more records than ever before.
And he actually won. Remember they uninvited him to the Grammys and he won Gospel of the Year. His album, Jesus, is Donda, one of the ones. I think it was either the Donda or the Jesus King.
His album's back on the charts again today. Right. When they tried to cancel him.
You know, today I saw a tweet by StopAntisemitism.org, an organization just seeking to cancel anybody. And they're trying to pressure Spotify to remove his music, to which the president had to respond and say, no, we're not removing his music. His lyrics haven't broken any of our terms and conditions, so we're not going to do that. Of course, this is not just public pressure, but it's funny that they want to cancel a guy that's putting out Christian music with a lot more value, with a lot a better message, an album that you can actually play with your kids. It's why he says he did certain songs, but they won't cancel What Ass Pussy, The WAP by Cardi B, or any of the terrible music that
offensive. What I don't really understand is he decided to run for president. I guess it's now 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But he made that decision after it was too late to get on the ballot anyplace. In other words, I know this because in 2012, when the Republican Party had the bad judgment to nominate Mitt Romney, who I saw as a complete phony from day one, I bolted the party of Lincoln, the party of Goldwater, the party of Reagan, to join the Libertarians, and I ran the drive to get Governor Gary Johnson of New Mexico on the ballot, and we got on the ballot in 48 states out of 50, and we lost court cases in the other two where we were cheated. So I know how difficult and expensive, and I know this legal process probably better than anyone in America. And Kanye could get on the ballot in every state, but he can't start 6 months before. It's a long, expensive process.
I think for him, it's just kind of like, you know, these artists are a little bit crazy. They're a little bit out there. I think for him, it's just like,
I can't
fuck
do it.
I'm exactly. Like, I'm going to try. Like,
how
I'm trying.
You guys want to bet that I'm going
to
run for president?
I know I'm probably not going to win this time. Maybe it's going to be 10 years from now, I'm just going to try.
If he does it again, he should call me because I could help him enormously.
No, and I think did you hear that? Roger Stone is willing to help
you, right now, you know, it's funny because everyone's like, they even removed his wax figure from whatever, what is that called, the museum in LA. I think that there's going to be a lot of people who won't want to work with Kanye West, but we want to work with Kanye West. So we'll take the opportunity to go with those.
A lot of people, I mean, he's going to have to, which I think is something that happens to a lot of people. You know, you've been a lifelong conservative your
Trump.
Entire life, but
a lot
not
of people
us.
Love Trump.
And I think that once you have that awakening where you're like, holy shit, like my values actually don't align with this party, you actually start discovering new people, right? Because you start finding your people that share your same values and ideas.
I mean, I'm a libertarian conservative. So, for example, I have been for the legalization of weed for 30 years. Mm-hmm. It's better than opioids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's grown in the earth. People have used it as medicine for 2,000 years. Now, I think you can smoke too much of it. I think you can screw up your life, but everything in moderation. But if we're going to legalize opioids, which are a killer, and we're going to legalize alcohol, which has killed far more people than THC has or that cannabis has, then we should legalize cannabis.
Why not decriminalize? Because
we should certainly do that first.
Right. Okay.
That's definitely step one.
Okay. Because I read some stuff that's come out of California since they legalized it there, and it's just like the numbers are not good.
A reason for that. So what happens, and this happened here in Florida as well, the big corporations, particularly in the agricultural business, who oppose it, as soon as it's legalized, they swoop in to control it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the idea of the individual grower or the individual dispenser, you can forget that. This is all controlled by giant corporations. So you have a corporate structure within the cannabis industry that has taken control.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers in terms of revenues, you want to pay for better schools, then legalize it and tax it. But at a minimum, criminalize it. People don't recognize this, but this, I think, is a key point. The war on drugs was launched by Richard Nixon, President Richard Nixon, but it was aimed at drug traffickers, drug dealers, and drug kingpins. It was Joe Biden, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Bill Clinton who turned the war on drugs and imposed the harsh mandatory penalties for the first time nonviolent crime of having small amounts of drugs for your personal possession. So even if you had no previous record, if you got caught with a tiny amount of pot in your purse or in your pocket.
This is a crime bill of 94, right?
Right. This is the 1994 crime bill. So they're the ones who criminalized the war on drugs and aimed it at the end user. Who changed that? Donald Trump in the First Step Act and the Second Chance Act. That's the first real criminal reform.
Obama couldn't even do it. Obama had been lying about.
He did nothing. He did nothing. He had both houses, and he had the public support, and he did nothing. And now Joe Biden announces that he's going to pardon everybody who's in prison on a federal pot charge. You know how many people that is?
Zero.
Zero. It's all optics. There are no people. It's an absurdity. So decriminalization is the first step for sure. You should not ruin your life because you smoked a joint.
No, seriously.
Absolutely not. Roger, what is your take on the party in general? How do you think that the GOP, you know, we complain often about the lack of backbone in the GOP.
They're weak.
Well, parties are defined by their leader. So until Donald Trump came along and hijacked their party in a hostile takeover, this was the party. This was the party of the Bushes.
Yeah.
So it was a country club party of wealthy elites who don't want to offend everybody, and they're making money with the Clintons and the Obamas. So I mean, why do we want to rock the boat and put America first? So I like the new America First populist based Republican Party. we're still a majority at the grassroots. We may not be a majority in the Miami-Dade County Executive Committee, but right. believe me, we're a majority at the grassroots. Those people have no energy. They have no ideas. Right. They have no backbone. Mm-hmm. They don't want to fight. They just want to make backroom deals. And my greatest worry, my greatest concern, is that the dominant MAGA America First wing of the party will become divided between President Donald Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis, right. opening the door for mittens yet again. Mitt Romney, right now, in Massachusetts, where he really lives, or not Utah, where he pretends to live, is planning another presidential campaign. He sees the MAGA vote being divided between Trump and DeSantis, and he sees his opportunity to make a comeback. That is my greatest concern.
And of course, there's those Republicans who disavow Trump and DeSantis, and they would totally get on board with a guy like Romney, for sure.
He recognizes that the MAGA group, the America First group, is a majority, but if you can divide them in half and still hold the establishment party base, maybe you can get nominated.
So tell us about this Trump and DeSantis kind of like divide, because what we see or what I've seen, I mean, I obviously have a big following on social media, and I get a lot of comments from people that don't want Trump anymore and people who do want Trump. So you have someone that like Mike Cernovich, right? He's constantly on Twitter talking shit about Trump. He hates Trump, right? Mm. And his whole thing is that DeSantis is the guy that he may not have the charisma, but there's no drama attached to DeSantis. He gets the job done. You don't have to constantly defend him in the media because he said, you know, called a reporter stupid or something. Mm. He is a lot more poised. And so that's like somebody with a million followers. Now, between my followers, that divide is basically the same thing. Like, we're tired of hearing the name Trump. Mm. There's so much drama. The media hates him. We just want a guy to get the job done like DeSantis and be quiet.
It's one of those things where it's out of sight, out of mind, though, right? Right. And Trump's been pretty quiet for the last 2 years.
I think, first of all, this has a lot of facets. First of all, having been in American politics for 40 years, I put a premium on loyalty. To me, loyalty is very, very important. Ron DeSantis was an unknown congressman with a bad haircut, an undistinguished record, and an ill-fitting suit. He was nowhere. He was in single digits in the
literally,
polls.
Literally, he was nobody.
Literally. Every Republican county chairman in this state, every single member of the legislature, both House and Senate, every member of the congressional delegation, with the exception of Matt Gaetz, all endorsed Adam Putnam, who reminded people of Opie on the Andy Griffith Show, the worst candidate ever. But that's who they were all for. Ron DeSantis was in single digits. One tweet by Donald Trump, one tweet endorsing Ron DeSantis, lifts on Ron DeSantis to the nomination. Now we get to the general election. Sadly, Ron went to Yale, but he doesn't know anything about state issues. Gillum is one smooth MF-er. He's been a mayor. He gets the issues. He runs left in the primary. He's trying to get back in the middle, and he's a pretty smooth performer. Go back and look at those debates. I don't think Ron won them. I think they were a draw at best. Ron's like a lot of guys who went to Yale. They think they're so smart they don't need to study.
Right.
So in the end, I argue that Donald Trump coming here twice in the last 2 weeks for rallies drags both DeSantis, who only won by 34,000 votes, and Rick Scott, Lord Voldemort, not another not warm and fuzzy guy, across the finish line. Yeah. So I really believe that Ron should recognize that he owes his political career and rise to Trump.
I'm on the phone screaming. Like, sometimes I just get into this crazy mood that I'm like, I am a Trump loyalist. Like, I'm a Trump loyalist. There's no, deserves it. He needs to do it
then,
again.
And then I do think, I'm voting for DeSantis in 2 weeks.
No, me too.
Let's also recognize, where was he for the first 2 years when the kids were masked? Mm-hmm. Don't pretend we never had masks. Right. We had masks. I mean, he was asleep for 2 years. He came alive in the middle of his term, thank goodness. But what will he be like tomorrow? He voted for TPP in the Congress. He went to Yale, where he was in Skull and Bones, the secret society that the Bushes all belong to. And when it comes to charisma, he's charismatically challenged.
Right.
He's a little boring.
I mean, what he's kind of doing right now is that he took the Trump playbook and said, all right, this is what people respond to. And then he's taken on those attributes as far as, you know, what he's pushing back on, how he pushes back, saying the right things.
That they're gonna piss off the media. I think it's further than that. He's usurped Trump's his physical actions, his mannerisms. Throwing the hats out in the crowd. Yeah, Where did that come from?
He's all taken
those guys
the whole
in the back, they're the fake dudes. Right. Where'd you get that, Ron? Right. So
I mean, everybody has.
He's taken the whole bit from
right.
Trump.
He took the sauce. He's trying to take
but
the
sauce. But that's why I can't imagine.
Ron DeSantis. I met him like in a small room when I have that picture with him, and he doesn't have the it factor. He doesn't.
There is no
warmth. I know
there.
How to recognize it. I've seen it. I can feel it. It's an energy. It's a thing. When I've met Trump before, it's like you just can't compare.
I just feel like the idea that there's any kind of competition is some form of like inorganic psyop created, because most people just, they're like, yeah, Ron DeSantis is cool until you throw Donald Trump into the mix. Right. And it's like, yeah, well, that's dad. Like,
well,
that's
well, daddy. That may be, but look, they're on a collision course. I predict here on your show that within days of being reelected in Florida, Ron will declare his candidacy. And I think sometime between now and that period, Trump's going to make it very clear that he's going to be a candidate. So these guys are on a collision course. And we're going to see who the big boys are. In every poll that I've seen, including in Florida, President Trump continues to lead Ron DeSantis.
Now, at TPUSA polls and stuff like that, every time that they do one of those big events, they poll, and Trump always comes out
On
top.
So, what's amazing is I think a lot of money was spent to try to tilt that poll to DeSantis, and it didn't, and it didn't work.
Right.
So I think, again, DeSantis is 42 years old. He should wait his turn.
He should wait.
Plus, there's also his responsibility. How do you say
in the state of Florida?
How do you say to the state? How do you say to the state of Florida, you just reelected me, I'm leaving?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we just reelected
and
you.
And doing a crucial time in our nation's history right now. Like, there's no, I don't think there's ever been a time in American history where the position of governor has been more important than it is right now.
And in this, notice in this hurricane, did you see the lieutenant governor anyplace? Did you see her? I didn't. I couldn't pick her out of a police lineup, by the way. Ron doesn't give her any exposure at all. How about Ashley Moody? Did you see her? No. She's a mouse.
Yeah.
She never says anything about anything. She's just kind of there, you know? She's just there. Jimmy Patronis, I kind of like him. He's got a little spunk, but Ron elbows him out of the way, too. So who's Ron going to leave us with?
Right.
Who would he leave
There's no one that's being prepared to take
and
over
this
that
guy,
role. You know, some people have come to my DM and said, oh, we thought we could have Francis Suarez as a governor. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's our mayor, Francis Suarez. You know who that is?
Yes,
he's,
I know.
He's terrible. He's a Democrat. He's not even a Kennedy Democrat. He's like a modern day Democrat.
Modern day BLM,
the one dealing with BLM, the one that doesn't stand up. He was giving people fines, $100 fines if you didn't wear a mask outside.
Yeah, that's not going anywhere. But there's no line of succession here. It's
and that's a problem.
It's wide open.
I didn't even think about that.
And I think this is the only thing that Charlie Crist scored on in the debate. And Ron didn't answer the question.
He didn't.
He asked him,
are you going to stay for your full term?
He finessed it. And he finessed it twice. That's because he has no intention
of
staying.
It was like a full minute of full silence from Ron DeSantis.
Well, first of all, Ron's not making this decision. His wife is. Let's just be candid. She thinks it's her time. He's got $150 million left over after this campaign. People didn't give that to him for a presidential campaign. They gave that to him for a gubernatorial race. But he's going to flip it around and use it to run for president. I think it's a giant mistake. And the reason I think it's a mistake is it's going to divide the MAGA people, and it's going to open the door for the rhinos to take control of the party.
Which then makes you start wondering,
Because
there has to be a certain level of self-awareness.
Unless Ron himself reverts to his rhino roots.
Which is what you have to wonder, right? Because if you're aware that you're going into the race is going to divide the party, then where's the self-accountability to be like, right now is not my time. All full support needs to be behind Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And the fact that if he fails to do that, which is why I sent out that text in the group chat yesterday, it worries me. It's like, why do you even want the optics of having to debate Donald Trump? Why do you even want the optics of having to launch attacks on him? It seems like if that was the move that he was making, it doesn't just seem selfish at that point. One has to wonder where
it does seem
very calculated.
Here's the other part. I like Mike Cernovich. He's a friend of mine. But the other thing I would say is Ron DeSantis is not controversial because they haven't opened up on him. Trust me, if he were the Republican nominee, The media would do the same thing to him that they did to Donald Trump.
Of course.
So the idea that there's going to be plenty of drama.
Absolutely.
We've already seen it.
This week they were talking about him in high school or college calling Thai food, like trying to make him seem like a racist against Asians. It's like a stupid headline. And I'm like, this is a preview of what they're willing to do. They've tried to associate him with Nazis when it was a TPUSA event in Orlando. So they're
people with Nazis. Let's talk about our topic that we talk about on every episode now with Roger here. Let's talk about Billy Corbin.
Oh, please.
This one's for you,
Billy. Little Billy.
So our viewers know Billy very well. He is a local Democratic operative. No morals. The guy's a true dirtbag in every way. Attacks moms, grandmas. It doesn't matter.
He's hated by
actually people on both sides of the aisle. Democrats and Republicans alike hate the guy.
I hope he's wearing his mask right now. I hope he's someplace wearing his mask. And let's face it. I hope he has not only his vaccination, but all of his boosters. Billy, you need to get all of your boosters and then none of us will have to worry about you.
Tell us a little bit about dealing with characters like Billy. I mean, you've been coming across character. Billy's not the first Billy that you've come across in your long career, right?
Well, he's the kind of person who will punch you and then run. Yes. He's the kind of person who yells at you but then runs away. They have no belly for the fight. And they totally all bought into this vaccination psyop. So they're all fully vaccinated. That's a time bomb, in my opinion. So I'd be more worried about my own health. Maybe he should stay home. Maybe should continue to wear a mask.
Yeah.
Maybe should get to the doctor immediately. I really like the way you guys have unmasked this whole phony Miami anti-fascist crowd and totally exposed them.
Yeah.
And the way that you put up great pictures of them. I mean, they're running. They're hiding under their beds now.
Yeah, I mean, the energy has definitely shifted, right? At this time last year, the attacks were personal. They were going against, calling people's jobs. We were getting posted about on a daily basis down to what we would wear, like if it was some kind of celebrity gossip site.
I think that this is kind of goes back to the question that I asked earlier about being on the offense and fighting back. I think that this is something that we've had to do alone completely. Like, not even men want to really step in.
But this is why they're so petrified about Elon Musk buying Twitter and Ye buying Parler.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, a level playing field. What are we going to do now? They've had all the advantages.
They can't control the narrative anymore.
They've had all the advantages, and they're mad because they still can't get a win, which is our argument to Billy all the time. It's like, you have no leg to stand on. You have no wins. We just flipped the Miami-Dade County-Dade school board.
Miami-Dade
is turning red. You guys lose voters every single day. We're not going to be teaching kids to, 100 genders and how to jerk off in the third grade. Those are all wins that we have had in Miami-Dade County. He doesn't have a leg to stand on. So I just wonder, the life of people like Billy. What's the outcome come 2023? What does he do? What is there to oppose right now? They're completely exposed.
I think it's just they just continue on their attacks, calling everybody a Nazi, calling everybody a white supremacist. I mean, that's what they're trying to do to the Latino vote, right? Because we're closer to whites. Then obviously,
and it was something that you brought up today, which was the voter turnout in support of Donald Trump was a great trigger for the attacks because they couldn't explain away why were all these Latinos voting red.
The battle is going to turn our way if we have a level playing field in terms of communications.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's driving them insane. So what do they say? Oh, Elon Musk is going to make Twitter a center of disinformation. Well, that's what it is today.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
What you mean is Elon Musk is going to open the doors and let everybody say whatever it is they want. They're petrified about that. The truth, they can't win with everything wired for them. So they control television, network television. They control the cable networks. They control the most of radio. They control all the print media. They control the internet. They control newspapers. But they still can't win. They can't turn the people. And now they're petrified that you're going to return to what you had in 2016. No Twitter, no Donald Trump. No wide open internet, no Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Trump was able to get elected because he was able to use Twitter as a platform to counterpunch against the left.
Correct. Right.
And now he's going to get that platform back.
Do you think he's going to go back?
Yes.
You think he'll go back?
Yes. I think we're all going back.
We're going back. But what about Truth Social? What's going on with Truth Social?
I like Truth Social, but the problem with it is if you identify it from the beginning as a platform for conservatives, that's good because we do need to be able to talk to each other. Right now, we can't even do that. But you're also limiting yourself, and you're cutting off two-thirds of the marketplace. Right. I'm more interested in what Kanye is going to do at Parler or what Elon Musk may do at Twitter, where we say, no, this isn't a conservative platform. It's not a Republican platform. Right. It is a platform for everybody like it used to be. Yeah. I had 1 million followers on Twitter.
Yeah.
I was banned in 2017. That's very early. Before Alex Jones, before Laura Loomer, they never explained why I was banned, other than the fact that I was winning arguments on there against leftists.
They never explained why. They don't explain.
They just
tell
banned,
you broke the terms and conditions, and that's it.
Although I did see a story today, quite credibly, it is entirely possible that the Biden administration will block Elon's
bid.
Acquisition of Twitter on the basis of national security, because he's not sufficiently anti-Russian, which is absurd, because right now he's supplying the Ukrainians for free his Starlink technology.
It's not that he's pro-Russia. He's been pro-Ukraine from the beginning. It's that he wants world peace. And so he's calling for negotiations, and he's saying, I just don't want to get blasted by a nuclear bomb, and I think we could have a conversation. And just saying that in this environment, in this political environment, labels you as a pro-Putin, pro-Russia asset. Have to want war. You need to want to exterminate Russians.
Narrative is false. Look, I had relatives mowed down by Russian tanks in Budapest in 1956. I'm half Hungarian and I'm half Italian. By the way, I'm Italian from the waist down.
Nice.
So, but the point of this is, in 1994, we signed a treaty with the Russians in which we agreed that Ukraine would be a neutral buffer zone. We agreed that Ukraine would not join NATO, but more importantly, we agreed that NATO would not put missiles pointed at Russia on their ground. We're now violating that. This is no different when the Russians put missiles in Cuba aimed at the United States, mm-hmm. and President Kennedy stopped them. So Putin has been very clear from the beginning that two things were unacceptable. They already built the silos. They're just waiting to drop the missiles in. No missiles in Ukraine pointed at Russia, and no bioweapons labs cooking up God knows what that they intend to dump in Russia. Oh, he doesn't even have the money to make it a puppet state.
He doesn't want Ukraine.
But if you say that, and I've said it, Tucker Carlson said it, Alex Jones, you're a Putin puppet, you're a Russian simp, you're a traitor.
Yeah.
No, I just don't want World War III and they're walking us right to the brink of World War III. Yeah.
They've been fucking around a lot with Putin. I mean,
they've been poking the bear for quite some time. That's why we don't even care about the names anymore when they call us.
In all aspects. I mean, even culturally, they want to force them into the LGBT marriages. They want to force them into all these things that the West is proud to display.
That are just not representative of Russian culture.
And they're an Orthodox Christian nation, though. Like, you can't really expect them to adjust to a Western lifestyle.
Well, I also think that they don't recognize the internal politics of Russia, where Putin's got a bunch of hardline generals who sooner or later are going to say to him, how much crap are we going to take?
Mm-hmm.
We have a nuclear arsenal. Right. They don't. And now we have Armageddon. That's what I'm afraid of. If he doesn't, he's not going to lose.
No.
Losing is not an option for him. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid they're going to drive him to the use of nuclear weapons.
Which is what they want in order to be able to have those optics to then use against them and be like, see, I told you you were the bad guy that I told everybody you were.
Lindsey Graham's calling for Putin's assassination, telling the Russian public that
he's
kill him and just replace him.
He's such a waste of human flesh.
He's the worst.
I got to tell you a story. So I was at Mar-a-Lago. I was at a big reception. All these Republicans are there. We're out by the pool. And Lindsey Graham's right on the edge of the pool. He's got his back to the pool. And I'm like,
this is my chance.
And my wife says, don't you dare. And I'm thinking, will the Secret Service grab me? Well, I'm not like, I start to move in that direction. She grabs me by the elbow and says, don't you dare.
She saw it. She saw the whole thing play out.
We thought we had the same moment in Valet at Mar-a-Lago.
In front of us at Mar-a-Lago, we were like, fucking Lindsey.
So here's a perfect example. The Supreme Court comes down, I think, at a very inauspicious time, but they correctly rule that abortion should be regulated by the states, that there is no federal constitutional right to an abortion. Sorry, all you pro-murder people, that's the way it is. And they say, oh, that's political. No, the original Roe v. Wade was political.
Right.
That was totally wired. Yeah. There's a great movie, by the way, called Roe v. Wade, produced by my good friend Nick Loeb. I suggest you see it. I play a Washington Post reporter in the movie. I have a short little cameo. I'm sleazy, I'm duplicitous, I'm oily, I'm totally dishonest. In other words, I nailed it. I'm exactly like your typical Washington Post reporter. It's a great movie, and it tells the truth. It's an absolutely true historical record of how they wired the Roe v. Wade decision. So now the courts say that this should, that the states should regulate this. Why does Lindsey Graham, though, dump in a federal bill in Washington to ban abortion? To help the Democrats.
To help the Democrats. To help the Democrats. We had an entire episode dedicated to this.
There's no chance that the bill is going to pass.
It's a belated move for the Democrats to energize the base right before election. That's all that was. Yeah, it was shooting into his foxhole.
He don't have the house. Why would he even think about that? It's one of the dumbest things that he's ever done. He's done a lot of dumb things.
It's purposeful. We now know on January 6th, when all this crap went down at the Capitol, and by the way, I was not there, didn't go to the Ellipse, didn't march to the Capitol, wasn't at the Capitol. Oh, you know a member of the Proud Boys. Yes, so what?
Yeah.
What does that prove? That proves nothing whatsoever. Right. That's called guilt by association. But I've lived through a lot of that in the last couple months. But the point is, Lindsey Graham is in a lavender rage. He's calling the White House, threatening to we're gonna remove Trump under the 25th Amendment. Mm-hmm. 3 nights later, after the story breaks, he's having dinner with Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Now, unless this is keep your friends close and your enemies closer, which is possible, I wouldn't have that little creep anywhere near me. And I must tell you right now, I really regret not pushing him in the pool.
Roger, do you think come 2024, Trump gets reelected? Do you think that we're going to see the same Trump, or do you think we're going to see dark MAGA come 2024?
I think he's learned a lot. I don't think he ever understood the depth of the resentment of the power elite, how much they hated him and how dedicated they were. And they were so nice to his face. I mean, when he went to the White House, Obama was nice to him and everybody was nice to him. But now they're fully exposed. They spied on him. They used totally phony information as a rationale for the Mueller investigation. I mean, it's all out there now. The media can say otherwise, but nobody believes them anymore. So I think if there is another Trump presidency, and I believe a number of Christian prophets who have said there will be,
right,
including Kim Clement.
Kim Clement, yeah.
Who said, you know, the giant will be brought down by a simple stone. Remember that name, he said. Remember that name. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
I think that this time things will be different. I think he'll be far more circumspect in who he chooses. I read the story in the Washington Post yesterday that he may have picked Chris LaCivita from Virginia to run his presidential campaign. This guy is excellent. I mean, he is one of the best in the business, somebody I have huge respect for. This is not Corey Lewandowski, some stumblebum drunk who is so busy grabbing asses that he can't
focus. What about Brad Parscale? Did you like him?
I think he stole about $37
million. Yeah, I mean, he had a lot of money.
He had not a clue what he was doing.
He's testifying against
Trump for the January 6th committee.
Do you think that kind of the... particularly Trump's allies, right? Yourself, General Flynn, or just to give a few examples. Do you think that he's a lot more conscious now of the company that he keeps around him? I think a lot of people can agree that, you know, when they were alienating him from people that you go back over 40 years, they were alienating him from the people that actually had his best interest. And then we had individuals, I know that recently there was a report made, comments that you had made about Jared Kushner, which we actually share with you. In fact, we've spoken about it very openly, that he had terrible advisors around him. He had a lot of people that weren't out for him.
Even his own daughter, you know. About Ivanka and Jared. Tell us about that.
They're about the money. Ye had this exactly right. They're about the money and the social status. So Jared Kushner, first of all, he's not the smartest man in the world. In fact, I don't think he's that bright. But it was all about the money. He's a liberal Democrat. His father was one of the kingpins of the Democratic Party in New Jersey. He was pardoned the same day I was pardoned. So if there is another Trump presidency, I wouldn't mind seeing Eric there. I wouldn't mind seeing Don Jr. there. They actually are true MAGA.
Right.
But Jared's a liberal Democrat, and so is his wife. They love abortion. They've been big donors to Planned Parenthood and the National Abortion Rights League. They never fit in a Trump presidency, but I think they elbowed other people out of the way.
Correct.
To the detriment of the president. Here's the great part. Very rarely in life do you get a do-over. In this case, I think Donald Trump accomplished an enormous amount, even with all those obstacles, even with all those quislings and rats around him. He built the greatest economy in American history. He redid all of these trade deals so that they were good for our trading partners, but also good for us. He brought hundreds of thousands of individual troops home to the United States instead of leaving them stranded in the Middle East. And the Russians and the Chinese
respected him.
They feared him. They didn't know what he would do. They were afraid to push him because he purposely let them know, you have no idea what I might do to you. They don't fear Joe Biden. They're laughing at Joe Biden.
Well, they also know he's an illegitimate president.
Well, you
know,
they bought him a long time.
Putin was one of the last world leaders to say congratulations to President Biden. He waited until January. He waited until he was
January
installed.
20th, yeah.
Because he knew, number one, that they had undermined the election the whole time with the Russian delusion hoax. And number two, that Trump was being robbed from
the
election.
And since the Chinese do know what business they did with Sleepy Joe, they can destroy him anytime just by coming forward and producing the records. I mean, it is unbelievable to me that my longtime friend and partner, Paul Manafort, goes to prison for lobbying for Ukraine, but Hunter's lobbying for Ukraine, Russia, China, and Romania, he's not charged. Right now in Brooklyn, Tom Barrack, friend of mine, good friend of the president, he's on trial for allegedly lobbying for UAE without registering. But Tony Podesta was hired by Paul Manafort to lobby for Ukraine. He never registered, but no charges are brought against him. Hunter Biden, no charges have been brought against him. What about 10% for the big guy? You want an issue for impeachment? There's evidence that a sitting vice president of the United States was taking bribes. Now we have evidence that there was an IRS investigation that he had to have Obama quash. Joe Biden will not be president in March of next year.
What do you think? They will just remove him and
One of two things happen. He'll either resign under pressure, or if he refuses to resign, his own party will remove him under the 25th Amendment. He's clearly not well.
Trump called it.
No, he's not well.
Trump called it. Trump has been mentioning the 25th Amendment being used against the beginning of January 2021. I'm sorry. Yeah. He said that they will use the Amendment 25th in order to get rid of Joe Biden. He's been calling that for a while.
They will. And you know what? In the end, I predict Biden will go quietly. He'll pardon himself, his son, and his brother before
and move
he
on
goes.
With his life.
His brother too,
Roger. Oh, yeah. You know, given what you've lived through with these corrupt agencies, do you think that there is any chance that the agencies can be saved, or do you foresee a future where there is a dismantled FBI?
It's a great question. You would need a president with an enormous amount of fortitude. You'd need a solid majority in both houses. But I think both of those agencies are entirely corrupted. They need to be cleaned out and restarted, or they need to be phased out and replaced. This is something we've never had before.
Correct.
Our Justice Department, the FBI, these were not politicized. The CIA's been up to shit for a long time. Right now, why are they refusing to release all the records regarding the assassination of John F. Kennedy? It's over 50 years. But
well, Biden wouldn't even release the 14,000 hours of tape. January 6th, right?
If we're going to have hearings on January 6th, could we see the video of the murder of Ashley Babbitt? Could we question that guy? Could you put him on the stand? No. So you don't see any of these things. Look, the Unselect Committee, nobody's buying this crap. Nobody. The voters certainly are not concerned.
They just don't
about
care
it.
Anymore.
Well, they care about gasoline prices.
Correct.
They care about food shortages. They care about the fact that their dollar doesn't buy anything anymore, that the buying power of the dollar is being destroyed. They're concerned that we're tiptoeing right up to the edge of World War III. We're sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, but we can't spend millions of dollars to seal our own southern border. We have a drug and crime epidemic across the country. In the big Democratic states, the criminal justice system has become a revolving door. Beat up a senior citizen, you'll be back out on the street in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can rob nowadays in California under $1,000.
It's happening here soon too.
Everywhere.
They're working to get it done here too. Do you, you know, seeing what we've all kind of had to see, right? Because the attack on January 6th and the fact that we have political prisoners. My parents escaped communism. My grandmother was a political prisoner in Cuba for almost 10 years and was kept away from her underage children. So to witness that here in America has been terrifying, first of all. To watch you get pulled out of your home in the dead of the night. To watch General Flynn's reputation be dragged to the mud as it was. To watch Donald Trump's home be raided by these agencies. Do you think that somehow the pendulum will swing and that these actions that they've taken will now open up the door for the same to be done to them once we're in control again?
We don't know exactly how it's going to go down. Here's the thing about God. God has a plan. But he doesn't always tell you his whole plan at once. He tells you his plan when he's ready for you to know it. And he only tells you parts of his plan until he's ready for you to know his whole plan. We do know how things come out because we believe the Bible. In the end, good triumphs over evil. And throughout the Bible, there's a time of reckoning. That time of reckoning will come. There's no doubt about it. So I don't know how exactly it will unfurl, but I do think we'll have justice. And I do think that God will not allow his great creation, this country, to be destroyed. So I'm optimistic. The difference is, as a political strategist for 40 years, I've always been kind of able to tell you how it was going to happen. I'm not sure how it's going to happen. But I do know the first step happens in about 2 weeks. And we'll kind of take it from there.
The elections.
Yeah.
What do you predict? Do the Republicans pick up the House?
First of all, I think it's very important to recognize the electorate's extremely volatile. Mm-hmm. And that there are, even in 2 weeks, things can happen. So we saw the Roe v. Wade decision change things. Then we saw the raid on Mar-a-Lago change things. So maybe World War III will happen next week.
We don't know. Yeah,
I mean, that's entirely possible. No, so what would the effect of World War III be on the elections? I mean, I hate to say it, but that's a legitimate question. Right. So right now, if you read the data right now and you watched that debate last night between Kathy Hochul, who Andrew Cuomo put in as governor, in essence, because he picked her as lieutenant governor, and Lee Zeldin, where I think Zeldin destroyed her. If you look at the debate in Pennsylvania where this poor guy Fetterman can't even say a sentence, I mean, he is completely out to lunch. If you saw Marco Rubio completely dismantle and demolish Val Demings, by the way, that's the greatest political debate I've seen in my 40-year experience.
Oh, you didn't see it.
You have to say it.
Marco Rubio, look, I've been a critic of Marco Rubio. I'm voting for him for sure. But he was as perfect in a debate as you can be. He was poised. He was in control. He was factual. He was funny at times, but he was in command from the beginning. She was angry, shill, stomping her feet, yelling, shaking her fist. She made an ass of herself.
That's such a typical Democrat, watching them lose their shit.
I would have thought, having been in this race for 2 years, that she would have been better. She lost the exchange on abortion. She lost the exchange on immigration. She lost the exchange on guns. I mean, this was a letter-perfect demolition of Val Demings. There is no one home. And let's be very clear. As a police officer, Val Demings left her service revolver in her unlocked car, and it was stolen, and it's never been recovered. So she wants to take away your gun, but she couldn't even take care of her own gun. If she's worried about criminals getting guns, what criminal has her gun right now?
I didn't even know she was a police officer.
She was the chief police of Orlando or Orange County.
I had no idea.
You know, speaking of Florida politics, and that our podcast really is centered towards Latinos and kind of giving them a voice, what's your take on the Latino vote and kind of what we're watching happen now for the first time?
This is the most historic change in the demographics of America in our history. So back in the 60s, Republicans like Ronald Reagan used to get 25% of the Hispanic vote. That's the best you could do. Reagan, I think when he ran for re-election in 1970, may have gotten 35%. But that means two-thirds of the Latinos are voting against you. What you see is a historic shift where roughly half of Latinos, half of Hispanics now identify with the Republican Party. I think it was Reagan who said Hispanics are conservatives. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah,
I mean, they believe in hard work. They believe in family. They believe in God. They don't like abortion. They're socially conservative. They're very free enterprise oriented. This is a seismic political realignment. And it has to do, there's a couple factors, I think. The first and foremost is there are a lot of refugees of communism and socialism who've seen in Venezuela or in Cuba how this really works. And now, and my wife is a Cubano. Her family came from Cuba. They lost everything.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know the red ladies. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Cuban women are the hottest, what can I say? This is a permanent change. We're beginning to make inroads into African Americans. It's been a long time
with those. They're tough to crack.
Well, it has been. It's because you had a welfare culture.
Right.
But as you have a rising black middle class, you have a more entrepreneurial black middle class. Black voters want the same things that we want. Safe neighborhoods, economic opportunities, better schools for their kids. So we're making inroads there. As I said before we started the show, let's take Michigan. Donald Trump got 1 point more of the black vote than Mitt Romney. Well, that's 10,000 votes. That swings the whole state of Michigan. So small incremental improvements in that community can bring huge change. And the Democrats are losing their mind over the fact that Hispanics are now breaking down the middle.
They don't know. This is a topic that we touch on often because, you know, they call the influence just, you know, misinformation or whatever it is. And we feel that, you know, for a long time, the attention on the minority black vote has been heavily focused by both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And I feel like even today, the Republican Party doesn't fully grasp how to manage Latino voters. I think that what's happening organically is that things have gone so far left that just culturally the response is, well, we only believe in two genders. So it's just gone that far extreme. We don't like killing babies. So again, it's like they're defaulting to the Republican Party, not because the party necessarily is doing anything to attract them as much as the Democratic Party is doing things to turn them away from the party.
I think it's a mistake, though, overall to think in terms of parties.
Right.
Because the country is run into the gutter by both parties working together. Yeah. The country is destroyed by a two-party duopoly of elites working together. You need to think about this in terms of individual candidates. Parties are only a reflection of the party's leader. Every great Republican president remade the party in their image. Reagan made us the conservative party. Before that, we had a liberal wing and a conservative wing. Under Reagan, we became a conservative party. And over time, there are no conservative Democrats anymore. That's an oxymoron. They don't exist. So there was a time when the Democratic Party in the United States had a liberal wing and a conservative wing, and the Republican Party had a liberal wing and a conservative wing. Nelson Rockefeller, Jacob Javits, Bill Scranton. These names don't mean anything to you, but we had a lot of liberal Republicans. We've had a complete realignment. Now we're more like Britain. One party is conservative. That's the Republican Party. The other party is liberal, even progressive, socialist at this point. That's the Democratic Party. What Latinos are not, they're not joining the Republican Party. What they're doing is waking up and figuring out they're conservatives. It's not that they're finding out they're Republicans.
Right.
They're finding out that they're conservatives, right. Meaning they're pro-freedom. They're pro-free enterprise. They're anti-regulation. They're pro-life. They're pro-God. That's what they're waking up to.
There are also a lot of them in the MSNBC documentary and a lot of these interviews by independent journalists like George Ventura. They also say the Democratic Party abandoned us. Like, we just don't
feel represented anymore.
You know, everything that they allegedly used to offer, they just don't do it for us anymore.
Well, I mean, name a pro-life Democrat.
You can't.
There are none.
And there used to be.
There used to be, and even then, they were oppressed. But there was
but at least they used to have some type of representation.
We don't even have to look that far away. When Barack Obama ran, he ran with an anti-gay marriage stance. Donald Trump was the first president to go into his campaign being pro-gay marriage. Like, once upon a time, they weren't openly communist operating. The Democratic Party wasn't operating as openly Marxist.
They're operating on the basis of their polling, but now it's all or nothing.
Right.
So The parties only serve as a vehicle. So I always say, look, I'm a Christian first. I'm an American second. I'm a conservative third. I'm a libertarian fourth. I'm a Republican fifth. And look, I was a young Republican national chairman from 1977
to 1979. You saw it on the documentary.
And I love the party as the party of Goldwater and the party of Lincoln and the party of Reagan and the party of Trump. But a party is only a vehicle to achieve your goals. And our goals are freedom. And this great realignment has nothing to do with the Republican Party. The Republican Party are a bunch of stuffed shirt country club assholes. People aren't voting for that party. People are voting for conservative principles. And that's what's driving the left crazy. Despite their total control of the media, despite their total control of the narrative that you can see on television and on cable, they're still losing the war of ideas. In fact, their answer in the war of ideas are, you must be canceled, you must be censored, you must be silenced. They can't win an honest debate.
Yeah.
They're afraid of an honest debate. They just want to shut you down. Suck.
You know, that's kind of like how we go back and forth with this Antifa page, Billy Corbin and all the other local goons is, you guys just need to try harder. Like, change your messaging. Have you tried not being cringe? Because they blame everything on misinformation. They want to censor people like her, censor people like me. And the reality is that nothing of what they're saying.
And they're
saying,
proud of it, too. They're proud of the censorship. They're proud of like, yeah, we'll get you canceled and we'll silence you because you are misinformed. Well,
that's why they're so hysterical.
But what you do is you hate the opposition because you know you can't win. But
that's why they're so hysterical. The things are about to change. Losing Twitter is like losing their church.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, Twitter is a sewer of invective and hate. You know, when I refused to go to the January 6th committee, you had people on Twitter suggesting the gang rape of my 73-year-old wife who's fighting cancer and who's hard of hearing. But they don't get banned. That's perfectly all right. Yeah. But, you know, if I criticize the fact that, I don't know, Anna Navarro is a fat load of shit, I mean, look, she's 180 pounds of shit in a 120-pound bag, if you ask me. But if I say that on Twitter, boom, you're gone.
Well, I have a tweet from 2 days ago of, I don't know who she is, but she's a verified Twitter user, this black lady. And she said something like, since we already know that the Republicans are Nazis, we should be allowed to be like vigilantes. What is it called?
Yeah, vigilantes
and kill them.
Yeah, well, bring it, bitch.
And I'm sure it's on there with thousands of retweets.
And then Scott Adam retweets it, and he's like, here's what the party that can identify between Nazis and Republicans, this is what they plan to do to you. And it's like, how the hell is this person allowed to exist on Twitter? And we say anything at all, and we're banned.
Well, this is why we go so hard at exposing them, because, you know, they do all of this through anonymity. They've got their anonymous pages they can do this from. You know, and they can dox Christians talking at school board meetings. They can vandalize family planning centers. They can do all these things and hide behind their anonymity in order to be able to do that. But the truth is that when you shine a light on it, it doesn't stand anywhere. The minute that you realize that, you know, Billy is a fucking nerd, then people are like, fuck what this guy has to say. The same thing with freaking Jenny Lee. Like, wait a minute, you have the audacity to make comments about the way that other women look and you look like that? Like, shit like that, where it's like, once they can no longer operate anonymously, which so many of them do, which is why they're allowed to stay on that platform, they're exposed. Yeah. And then people see them for what they are.
Look, there's a group of menopausal harpies on Twitter who hate me. I won't show their names because that would make them happy. But they need to understand, the more they attack me, the more I love it. Yeah. I revel in their hatred. I'm driving them insane because I'm still here. In fact, I will outlive every single one of them. If you're waiting for me to be arrested on January 6th, then I think you have a long, cold wait coming because I don't know anything about it.
Well, they're still waiting for Trump to be arrested, and it's been like 6 years, and they're still just waiting
for
Trump.
They're still waiting for something to come out.
Well, there are people who need to be arrested. I would recommend Hunter Biden and his father for openers.
For starters, I'd recommend Hillary Clinton and John Podesta, but that's just me.
Roger, as we are near or at the end of our interview, what can you tell young people like ourselves and all of our listeners who are more or less millennials, if you'd say, what message do you have for them overall, not just in politics, but like, you know, you've lived an extraordinary life, total icon. Like, what can you say to young people?
Never give up.
Okay.
There are going to be times when things look dark, when things look difficult, when you think you're facing defeat, when you think the whole world's collapsing and everything's against you. You can never, ever give up. God has a plan. It's a good plan. It is a plan in which good triumphs over evil. But you have to play your part. What people can't do is drop out. They can't say, oh, well, we're defeated. I don't want to do this anymore. So my message to everybody, I go back to what Nixon said, a man is not finished when he is when he's defeated. He's only finished when he quits. There are going to be dark days ahead. This is not all going to be peaches and cream. But above all, people, if you love the country and if you love freedom, the freedom to listen to the music you want, the freedom to love who you want, the freedom to express whatever view you want. See, I'm not against communists talking. I think communists should be on Twitter. Mm-hmm. They should be on Parler. They should even be on Truth. I say let everybody talk. That drives them insane. That's not what they say. They say, oh, only we can speak. So young people should recognize that America's greatest days lay ahead, but above all, they must never quit and never give up on America.
I love that. That's iconic. The message, right? That iconic. And where can they find you? We know that the major Twitter is for now, but where can people find you?
You can find me at stonezone.com. Okay. That's my brand new website.
Okay.
I used to be at stonecoldtruth.com. Hopefully it now forwards, but we're working on that. stonezone.com. You can get your very own iconic Roger Stone Did Nothing Wrong t-shirt.
Nice.
You can get an autographed copy of my presidential pardon. In fact, I think I'm going to send one to Billy Corbin just the hell of it.
Please do.
you can get your official signed Roger Stone. I take these white stones. I sign my name on them. It's a Roger Stone. They're not weapons, by the way. They don't throw them at liberals. They're just paperweights. you can get all of my books, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, The Making of the President, 2016. My favorite book of them all, Stone's Rules, which is kind of my rules
for life. I need to read that one. Book club.
Life and Style. If you go to stonezone.com in the store, you get a signed copy. You can go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon if you want to give your money to leftists. But if you buy it from me, you'll get a signed copy. I do a show every day at 5 o'clock Eastern. At StoneZone.live, StoneZone.live. It's up now at Frank's Beach. It's up at Cozy TV. It's up on Rumble and more sites to be developed. But every day, 5 o'clock Eastern, StoneZone.live. Check it out.
Nice. What about Rumble?
I'm up on Rumble. Okay, just now started doing Rumble's live feed. They have a great functionality there. I'm a little slow on the technology. See, I'm just the talent.
Is their talent.
I need somebody else to do the technology.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We're very excited. You're going to be our launch on Rumble.
That's good. As we get on. Just thank you for everything that you do, Roger. It's been a long fight for you, and you really are an inspiration.
And you inspire people like us.
You inspire people to take down our enemies. Right. And
I would say two things in conclusion. One, I'm just warming up. Two, Roger Stone did nothing wrong.
Roger Stone did nothing wrong. And guys, thank you so much for tuning in again. Please don't forget to hit that subscribe button, like, and share our content. And we'll see you next time.
See you guys next week.